You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. My grandfather, who I called Poppy Boy, died when I was pretty young. But I would still see him every time I went over to my nan's. When you walk into my nan's house, the first thing you see is an entrance table, filled with trinkets and photo frames and albums, and next to all of the little keepsakes is a giant oil canister. Printed on the oil canister are the words Captain Margarine, with this monochrome picture of my pop wearing a captain's hat and jacket, steering a ship. Poppy Boy used to work at a margarine factory, and one day some fancy businessmen looking to sell the margarine oil in China came to visit the factory. And when they saw my pop, they knew he was exactly the man they had been looking for. They dressed him up in a captain's outfit and took a photo of him. And he became the official mascot for Captain Margarine Margarine Oil. I don't remember much about my pop, but being greeted by his picture on that oil canister, with his big beard and his fancy hat, was always very special to me. My mum tells me he loved this story so much that when he died, my family dressed him up in his Captain Margarine jacket for his cremation. The oil canister on the entrance table reminds my family of this moment in my pop's life. In our first story, Sepe looks at a camera that reminds him of the time his father won a game show in the year 2537.
In my apartment in Sydney, I have a camera. It's a slim Copal pocket camera, and on the back is a plaque adorned with Farsi calligraphy that reads, "Gifted from the Educational Entertainment Channel, year 2537. The date on this camera is symbolic of a brief moment in Iran's history. In the 70s, Iran was a very traditional country on the verge of a massive change. Oil had been discovered, and barrels of it were raining down. With it came money, clothes, and music, and fancy drinks with little straws that were pouring in from the West. All of a sudden, the air smelled of hope. As part of the country's modernization, Shah Mohammad Reza had the crazy idea of changing the date by 1,180 years. The starting point of the previous calendar was the pilgrimage of Prophet Muhammad from Mecca to Medina. But this new calendar would begin from the crowning of King Cyrus, known as the father of ancient Persia. Overnight, millions of Iranians were thrown forwards in time. My dad was one of them. In 1977, he was 17 years old, a young man excited to appear on national TV. He and his classmates competed the ranks on a general knowledge game show. They got to third place. Pretty impressive, if you ask me. He had big ambitions at the time. He was learning English. He was planning to go to university in the US. The thing about a camera is that it records a single moment in time, freezes it, and extracts it from the continuity of history so that it floats, unchangeable. When I look at my dad's old pictures, I see a young man with flare pants the width of the Caspian Sea and a grin to match. I think how things could have been different. Just 1 year after he won the camera on the TV show, a revolution swept through the country, followed by 8 years of war. Everyone's life was about to change. Their year would be changed again, this time 1,180 years backwards. My dad's plans would never come to fruition. Life moves in unpredictable ways, but there's nothing like a revolution to turn the chaos up to 11. The initial promise of the 70s led to huge disappointment. When people looked at their fancy clothes and fancy drinks, they no longer recognized themselves. The Shah changed the calendar in hopes of secularizing society, but many saw it as a blatant attack on religion. They realized that religion was the last thing that connected them to their identity. Some say if he'd never fiddled with the calendar, the revolution might never have happened. And then who knows? What else would be different? perhaps my dad wouldn't have stayed in Tehran for university, or met my mom at a party a few years later. Perhaps I wouldn't have been born. When I see my dad's camera in my apartment in Sydney, I time warp back to 2537, to the country balanced between hope and revolution that no longer exists.
That story was produced by Sepa Jamshidi Fahd and Eugenia Zubchenko as part of KCRW's 24-hour radio race. In our next story, Julia's grandpa speaks at his own funeral.
March in Melbourne was meant to serve as a celebration for my grandfather's 100th birthday. But just 14 days shy of this magic milestone, it sadly morphed into his funeral. Although Grandpa had already received congratulatory certification from the Pope, the Queen, and Australian parliamentary royalty, my family felt shortchanged on his behalf that he hadn't made it to triple digits. Having endured the Great Depression and 6 years of World War II as a 19-year-old soldier, Grandpa was never particularly concerned about his death coinciding with a global pandemic. In hindsight, had he survived to the big day, COVID-19 would have had him either blowing out the candles on his own, or failing that, digging his own grave. Although drive-through birthdays for the elderly became all the rage, even Grandpa could not be convinced about the logistics of a drive-through, drop-off funeral.
In those days, the no such thing as takeaway. A lot more home deliveries in those days. Your milk was delivered, you'd put your billy can out at your gate. Mail, of course, there was the postman would deliver. Newspapers were delivered to the home.
Courtesy of the pre-COVID lockdown departure, Grandpa was relieved of all delivery duties, bar one. He was still charged with delivering the eulogy at his own funeral.
Pay attention, please. If I see you talk again, I'll bring you up the front.
Grandpa lived by himself in a townhouse in the Melbourne suburb of Glen Waverley for all but the last few months of his life. He'd been staunchly opposed to the idea of ever relocating, making it clear to my father that he would not be bought out.
He received a phone call from a very raw young real estate agent desperate to sell his house to the rapidly growing Asian population in Burwood East. "Please let me know if you're planning to move, Mr. Bergen." "Darling," said Dad, "the only move I'll be making is to Springvale." Undeterred, she said this was great news, failing to appreciate that Springvale was in fact the cemetery.
Grandpa never skipped a beat. His 1 week in an aged care home was too short to register as a formal change of address. He stuck to his will and moved straight on to greener pastures at Springvale Cemetery. Notwithstanding his residential status, he was given a royal departure by the aged care facility. I was fortunate enough to be there, together with my aunt and uncle, when Grandpa finally pulled up stumps. During his final hours, Grandpa's all-time favourite tune, "Oh Danny Boy," was blasted on repeat.
"Oh Danny Boy, the pipes are calling."
And upon learning he was a religious man, a priest was brought in to give him a blessing.
"And down the mountainside, the summer's gone. And all the flowers are dying."
In the spirit of things, the nurse decided post-blessing was the opportune time to raise the bed from its certifiably safe resting place on the floor. Despite the intended sobriety of the moment, the ceremonious elevation of Grandpa into the heavens had us all in fits of laughter. But we weren't breaking any rules. According to Grandpa, it was protocol to prioritise humour.
"Well, I'd put it this way. In our family, we've always tried to get running through our lives 60% humorous, 40% serious, because there's plenty of time in life to be serious."
Having just come back from 6 months in Japan, I was exceptionally pleased to be able to spend Grandpa's final day bringing him up to speed on Japanese nudity protocol. Whether or not he took a liking to my chosen topic, I have no doubt Grandpa appreciated the satirical soliloquy. He could now rest easy, knowing that someone in the family could equally and endlessly regale my father with the same gift of the gab.
Let me tell you a story. Have you got a couple of hours? Pay attention. There'll be questions at the end. He was particularly prone to the prolix. Why say in 10 words what you can say in 100? You knew you were in for a fair hiding with a long session when he came out with the most feared phrase of all, "I digress." That could take you on a journey to anything from Japanese cultural traditions to one of his favourites, which was the link between earlobe length and longevity. Often you could be on the phone to Dad, have a break, go to the toilet, go shopping, maybe mow the lawn, and you could come back and undeterred he'd still be going.
Well, this is where I should interrupt before I answer that question. Well, I'll answer that question, but I'm just throwing this extra information. And there are only two flavours of ice cream. That was it. There'd be strawberry or vanilla, and no other flavours available. Now, to talk about that, I think I should talk about that. People had no refrigerators. They had ice chests. An ice chest would be half the size of a refrigerator. The ice went in the top, and the lower part you put your food. The ice would melt and drip into a tray, and somebody in the house had to empty that at the end of every day, empty the water from the drip tray. You would keep your milk and you'd keep your butter, and no such thing as margarine. It was all butter in those days. How'd I get onto that? So,
as a journalist, it's going to be hard to take Grandpa's advice that I should never let the facts get in the way of a good story. But I will certainly be upholding his commitment to words and the greater good of the tale. In his later years, the subject matter of these glorious yarns seemed to inevitably regress into the latest and greatest of his bowel movements. Guests at both his 98th and 99th birthday were all briefed during his acceptance speeches. Stories revolving around other medical ailments were always angled, not what the doctor said, but what Grandpa said to the doctor.
One of my favourite yarns was after Dad broke his hip. He was struggling with pain and frailty and just general malaise. I asked how he was going and he said, "Well, I guess I'm going to die." Very concerned, I asked, "What did he mean?" He said, "Oh, I'm on the Nitschke euthanasia pill. I'm on end one. Should be dead in a couple of days." And I said, "Show me the box. That doesn't make any sense." It was, of course, the painkiller Endone.
Grandpa really did live a life filled with humour, which is why a few years back I thought he would be the perfect candidate to help me see the humour in the process of death. I had a university project which required me to make a podcast with the theme of blood. I opted for bloodlines. I decided that the best way to put the family dynamic on show was not with the introduction of new people to the family with a wedding, but through the exit of someone with a funeral. So I pitched this idea to Grandpa and asked him if he would like to comment on the state of affairs of his own funeral. I reasoned this wasn't the first time he'd thought through the logistics of his departure.
He was an accountant by trade for his whole working life and, needless to say, was an incredibly organised traveller. So organised was he that he even investigated burial at sea to stop us worrying about having to bring the body home if he died. Unfortunately, he found out that he wouldn't be able to do that because it was reserved for members of the Navy or, alternatively, pirates.
But this time, Grandpa wasn't interested in being on the funeral planning committee. The answer was a very staunch no, followed by a long lecture about the negative repercussions of pursuing a project of this nature. Specifically, I would no doubt fail my grades. Grandpa loved to say no, but more than that, he loved the drama of changing his mind. Not if, but when you managed to convince him. He would be the life and soul of the party. And so it played out. My father and I managed to lure him into a home recording studio and have him trial a few lines, with which he turned around and said, "This is fabulous. I just wish you'd given me more time to rehearse my lines." 3 years later, the plans for Grandpa's funeral came to life. My uncle, followed by my father, each took their turns to say a few words, and then it was over to me. The congregation were visibly concerned when I announced Grandpa would like to speak about his departure, but then I hit play. This is the funeral planning podcast I recorded with Grandpa and my father 3 years prior to his death. Played at his funeral as the final part of his eulogy. Negotiations for Grandpa's funeral are currently underway between Grandpa and Father. They firstly discussed music.
It's obviously going to be a requiem mass, and by definition, the hymns would be deeply religious.
I would like O Danny Boy. In fact, the ultimate would be a microphone in the casket, and then I would invite the congregation to join in. In fact, I'd give you a sample right now if you'd like it. O Danny Boy, the pipes are calling.
They also considered the funeral size.
Everybody loved Dad. This will be gigantic. It will be bigger than Ben-Hur.
Well, I would have visualised a small funeral, immediate family, really. Having said that, lots of other people I could think about. This lady on the cruise ship in South Africa proposed marriage to me. There's the butcher at Coles. In fact, all the staff at Coles. And this strange lady I met the other day walking down High Street. I would also like it to be dog-friendly. The crowd could magnify. It could get bigger and bigger. If it did, I would like to visualise that we could make a small charge for admission. That would suit me fine.
Next, they deliberated how best to dispose of the body.
I prefer to be buried, but I hope the casket can be properly handled, because I did attend a funeral where the casket was dropped, fell the wrong way and got wedged into the grave. So they had to call the fire brigade. I was also at another one where the casket was badly handled, that's why it concerns me, where the corpse couldn't be removed from the funeral car, so the rear window had to be smashed to get it out. I think that I might like to take out insurance against this to see that all these people are qualified to do the job.
Oh, definitely not a cremation. Has to be a burial. The last cremation I went to was down at Wilson's Prom. The ashes were solemnly scattered into the waves, which then turned around and started washing up on people's shoes on the beach. Not repeating that exercise, definitely not. Having said that, I am a bit concerned about the dog-friendly funeral. I'd hate little Sammy to start digging up bones at the cemetery. We'll have to watch that one.
Finally, they agreed on who would speak.
I've been a doctor for 35 years, and the only way we will know that Dad is actually dead is if he doesn't speak. And to be honest, even then, I'd be surprised if we don't hear from him at the funeral as well.
That's good.
I'm pleased to announce that Grandpa got his wish and the funeral was dog-friendly. No bones were dug up, but my dog Sammy did try to jump into the grave with Grandpa at the burial. As requested, Grandpa's funeral was anything but the traditionally sombre affair. Even the funeral director commented, "I don't normally say this about funerals, but this was fantastic." And it really was. For a man whose lasting legacy is his humour and his voice, it was only fitting to hear the final word from Grandpa at his own funeral.
That story was produced by Julia Bergen. The supervising producer was Jordan Fennell. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. In our final story, Toni traces her heritage through the recipes and traditions that she learned from her grandmothers.
Granny Ivy's tacos and fajitas, 2 cups of U.S. blend non-spicy chili powder, 1 cup of sweet paprika, 1/2 cup of ground. Hello, I am Toni Burnett Rand, or Honey Child, depending on how you know me. 2 tablespoons of ground dry chipotle chili. We are Creoles from Louisiana by way of St. Kitts and Belize. The joke is that we are everything but Vikings, and I married a Viking, so now we have that too. Heritage cooking for me is the inspiration and source for your creation is rooted in your ancestry or in your own DNA. In my case, it's combination DNA and my travels because I've had a very blessed life of seeing much of this world. So I try to fold that into my cooking with my ancestors always as the compass. I'm always influenced by what I've been told and taught through my grandmothers. So preservation cooking is very important. So we've always, as a family, there's a lot of us, so many hands mean many bellies. And so when the men would go fishing and hunting and trapping, they'd bring it all home, and then we'd all descend on it. And because of either your age or your level of skill, you got put in a circle to help and to learn these traditions. I believe I was maybe 5 years old when I got to be able to peel with a knife, not a peeler, but a knife, because my grandma said, if you learn to cook in a humble way, you can cook anywhere and everywhere for everybody. When I make a pot liquor, I always start with the bones and cold water, all of my seasonings, and I let that go. And then usually I remove the bones and all of the aromats. So you remove it just to make your guests more comfortable. But my grandma said, in times of trouble, you leave those bones in because it is time for you to slow down. It is time for you to remember. And it's time for you to be reverent about the opportunities that you have around you so that you can make really good choices. And that's why I take it so, so very serious. And it is my honor to display heritage because a lot of people understand the parts of Black culture that they enjoy, but they don't understand the roots or how we were able to cry and laugh at the same time. How we can protest and protect, how we can march and mourn. We are a dual people of great ebbs and flows. And I really love that I get to tell that through my food. I mean, from a brownie to gumbo. No matter what else is going on in your life, you have to stop and eat a couple times a day. And if you can do so from a source that you know has nothing but the pure intention of seeing you better than you started, there's nothing I can think of that I could be doing with my time that is more important than that. Anytime I have cooked Mexican food, it is 100% Granny Ivy. And any human being lucky enough to be loved by their grand has that memory of opening the door to grandma's house and what does it smell like? And because my grandma was a proud Texican, I never have cooked any Southwestern based anything that was not hers.
That story was produced by Lee Redfern and Sarah Mashman. It placed 3rd in KCRW's 24-hour radio race. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and were made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find more episodes by searching for All the Best wherever you get your podcasts.